Before we get into this week's podcast, our guest is Alex Chamberlain. He's a writer at Rotographs. We had a great conversation. It was a lot of fun. He's one of my favorite writers in the industry right now. We recorded this late last week, and we all woke up on Sunday to the tragic news of the passing of Jose Fernandez and two of his friends after a boating accident off the coast of Miami Beach. And obviously, it's just devastating news, and our thoughts and prayers are with the Fernandez family and the Miami organization, the community. There's been a lot of things written by some fantastic writers, just to name a few. Ben Lindbergh at The Ringer had a great piece. Mauricio Rubio at Baseball Prospectus. I could go on. Jeff Passan at Yahoo. There's so many great stories just remembering not only who Jose Fernandez was as a baseball talent that rose above, that was just incomparable, but who he was as a person. And I think that's what stands out the most, and just how much he meant to people, and just what a fun, charismatic person he was. So I think those are important stories. You should go read them. There's a lot of them. You should do that. This is a fantasy baseball podcast, so we're not going to talk about it very much moving forward. It's obviously just a devastating tragedy. Before we go into today's podcast, I do want to leave you with one Jose Fernandez story. I never met Jose Fernandez, but I did go to a Marlins Red Sox game last summer with my family visiting from North Carolina. My cousin, she was about 10 at the time. We had seats along the third baseline, so what I used to do as a kid, you'd go down right by the visiting dugout, and you go there and you watch, and you know, maybe someone will throw you a baseball, something like that, come out and give you a high five. That's what we all did as kids growing up. So she went down and stood by the Miami Marlins dugout and was there for about half hour, 45 minutes, just watching them warm up and then take infield and everything you do pregame. And at one point, one of the players came out, signed a baseball, and handed it to her. And that was the only player who did that day, and that player was Jose Fernandez. And I think that's just a great example of who he was, just someone who cared about everyone and just was larger than the game itself. So wanted to share that story. And on that note, we're going to dive into today's podcast. This was a really fun one. I don't want to lose sight of that. I think this was a really fun one. Alex and I talked about a lot of things for 2017, kind of recapping the 2016 season. And this was good. I really enjoyed this one. So that's coming your way next here on Flags Fly Forever. Let's get it going. Everybody, welcome to episode 105 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. My name is George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by a very special guest for this edition. He's a writer at Rotographs. You can follow him on Twitter at Dolph Haldhagen, which is an unconventional Twitter name. More on that a little bit later. It's Alex Chamberlain. Alex, how you doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm excited to talk to you. This is the first time we've ever spoken via Skype or any other medium, really.
Yeah, I try to avoid you at all costs, but but here we are. So, well, and I'm very pleased to be a very special guest. That's you already made my day. So,
I don't want to burst your bubble, but I think I say that about everyone. So,
dang it! All right, yeah. Well, that's fine. That's fine.
Well, worlds have collided. This is a Rotographs and BP podcast here, and we're going to be talking a lot about 2017. There's a lot to get to, and Alex, I want to kind of start off with this experts mock draft that's going on right now, the hashtag way too early mock, where there's about 15 industry people from a bunch of different sites, and the results have been interesting, so to speak. But I want to get your take on something that happened in the first round because Clayton Kershaw went seventh. And I feel like everyone I talk to, the conversation always has to start off with Clayton Kershaw and where you see him being rated next year, or where he ends up in your rankings or in your valuations for next year, depending on whether or not it's an auction or a snake draft. But where do you kind of see Kershaw shaping up? Do you still have him as a surefire first-round guy, or are you a little bit more concerned about him moving forward?
There's always the context of, like, the size of the league and the depth of the league and all that, but I think he's a legit first-rounder. I do. And I, you know, if he didn't get injured this year, and not like I have that foresight or anything, I liked him number one overall. I would have been one of those people who took him number one overall, not really without blinking an eye. He's that good. He's kind of like, I mean, he's the Mike Trout of pitchers, who is perpetually underappreciated for how incredibly good he is. And he can carry a rotation no matter how bad it is. I totally get not taking a pitcher up front, and the durability thing now actually comes into play because he, you know, herniated disc or whatever it was.
Back issue there that was
A mess. Yeah, I wouldn't think twice, honestly, even with the back issue.
Yeah, we were kind of talking about this a little bit off the air before we started recording, but it's kind of that we're in that difficult area of the year where we haven't started to officially turn the calendar to 2017. We haven't done any evaluations or any actual prep, any preliminary projections, anything like that. So does that make this a more difficult time to talk about next year? Obviously, I think it does a little bit, but I think because our impressions of what's just happened with the season are so fresh, I think it's actually one of the more beneficial times to look ahead, because we're going to get into this time in the off season where we evaluate everything and our opinions on players are going to change. So do you think there is maybe a little bit of a benefit to looking ahead this time of the year, or am I just crazy in that regard?
It's interesting and kind of like a market inefficiency regard. Because I think we're going to, you know, we'll get all the projections in February and March. And that's when I'll run my own projections too. And, you know, the ADP starts rolling in October. I mean, when you think about it, because people, you know, idiots like us start doing mock drafts. So you can kind of compare, like, the market perception to what essentially the computers think of these guys. Right now I'm going by my own perception, which I hate doing because I love to have a spreadsheet in front of me at all times. And it's, I feel incredibly not confident about what I'm doing. But yeah, it's interesting. It's really quite fascinating to see recency bias at play because Dozier went second round. Gary Sanchez will probably go fifth round.
I like Gary Sanchez, though.
That's a play. I like that play. But, you know, we're talking about, I think Dozier's probably like the, you know, the quintessential example here of like the last 3 months are cranking his price up. And that maybe that's warranted. But I don't feel comfortable at all saying he's a second rounder without like really digging into it. So.
Yeah, so if you're going to tweet at Alex later, use the hashtag Captain Spreadsheet if you're going to do that. You've kind of hit on the elephant in the room, and that's the uptick in power this season across the league, but specifically at the middle infield spots. And this is something I've talked about with my colleagues, Brett Sayer and Mike Gianella, on the podcast in recent weeks and in our last episode. And I'd love to get your thoughts on how you're evaluating the middle infield position now, because we've seen so many guys just eclipse that 20 home run plateau that I'm not even sure what to do. Is this a blip on the radar? Or are we going to see some of those power numbers going down? I mean, we got guys like Freddie Galvis hitting 20 home runs. So has your opinion on those positions changed a little bit now as we head into the off season? How are you approaching that as you build your projections for next year?
Oh, that's a good question. I've actually thought about this and I've tried to do my own research into what's happening, and I, like everyone else, I'm not really coming up with anything conclusive. I think the baseline for, okay, obviously the baseline has raised in terms of power, at least for this year, which kind of brings up the entire position. It doesn't really change a whole lot. Like, if everyone's hitting 5 or 10 more home runs, you maybe don't have to make a big, like, wholesale change to your middle infield strategy. I think I'm going to be more focused on guys who run, because okay. relative to power, speed is becoming scarcer. So the guys who can do a little bit of everything, I think, like, I'll probably take, like, I mean, Rougned. Jesus. I mean, he might be like a number one second baseman for me if he's doing like 25-15 or something, but I'd have to look at a list. But I think, like, I'm super big on Jose Ramirez, who could, I don't even know if he's still middle infield eligible.
He's eligible a bunch of places, I think.
Yeah. He can, I mean, doing the 10-25-300 thing is like, oh, that's my weakness.
There's guys like Eduardo Nunez who've just come out of the woodwork. Jonathan Villar has had an incredible season, power and speed, that combination. There's a bunch of guys. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I was the guy a year ago who was standing on top of a soapbox in the middle of the town square and screaming out about Billy Hamilton. Like, I didn't understand why people were discounting him or saying, you know, Billy Hamilton sucks. And yeah, he's not a good hitter, but he's going to steal 60 bases, and that has value. So I'm right there with you on speed.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I say this, I think I've written the last 2 years I've written about Billy Hamilton, and it's I get it. He's a bad, not a bad baseball player. He's a great defender. He's a bad hitter. He's a miserable hitter. But the stolen bases are worth their weight in gold. I mean, he can pick you up 7 points alone in a stolen bases category. So like the damage that he does to your RBIs or whatever, that's not, you know, that's not enough to write him off, because he's such a force in a single category. Actually, in runs, he's not bad too, but, you know, in stolen bases too. And touching on VR, I'm just going to change the subject because I can.
Yes, do it.
VR, I think, is legit, because really? he has shown all of these elements of his game in the last 3 years, and it all finally came together last year when he shored up his plate discipline. So I'm on board. I don't know if people are skeptical about this, but I was on board before this season started.
Plate discipline relative to Jonathan Villar, right? Because, I mean, he's still struck out 165 times.
Right. We're talking like a 25% strikeout rate versus a 30% strikeout rate kind of thing. And, you know, obviously I don't think the BABIP is going to stay afloat.
Yeah, you prepared for that all off season to hear about his BABIP, because I think if you are coming out in support of Jonathan Villar, you're going to hear 376 or 380 BABIP all off season. It's going to happen.
Honestly, if he hits 250, I don't even care. If he had 250 this year, I wouldn't care, because if he's going to hit 15 home runs and steal 50 bases, he could hit 200 for all I care, and he'd still be fine.
Yeah, I found this cool stat, because I ended up, I'm working on a piece on VR right now, and in the last 20 years, he's one of 6 players to hit above 280 with 15 or more home runs and 50 or more steals in a single season.
Damn, that's like Ricky Henderson territory. Is that what we're talking about right now?
Yeah, I mean, Ricky was over 20 years ago, but he's like the last guy who did it routinely. Jose Reyes, Carl Crawford, and Hanley Ramirez each did it twice, and that was like 2006 to 2009 range. And VR is the first guy since 2009 to do it.
Wow.
Like Jose Altuve came close a bunch of times, and, you know, D. Gordon, obviously without the power, would make that list. But the only other two guys who did it were Craig Biggio in like 97, and he was 32 at the time, which is incredible. And Eric Burns, if you remember, in 2007, he had that crazy year, and then he got hurt and never really played again. But
I'm going to look it up right now because I don't remember.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it now, yeah.
He played like 160 games that year, and I don't even think he played 160 the rest of his career. So
he played 151 games the rest of his career.
Yep. He was not good. Injuries, man. But yeah, so I think there's a little bit of regression coming with VR in, I think, the power, to me, I think. That doesn't mean, when we say regression, I hate this. Everybody says when you say regression, that means you don't think a guy is going to be good. I think Jonathan Villar is going to be really good, but if you just look at historically, not a lot of those guys did that after the age of 25 again. it's really rare to see the total power, speed, and average combination. So I think there's a little bit of a backslide coming with VR, but I still think if the Brewers are going to play him every day, he's going to be really damn good. It's not going to matter.
Yeah, and they really don't have much of a choice, like internally speaking. So
yep. So let's talk about Trey Turner, because
I knew this was going to go to Trey Turner at some point.
I don't want to do this all off season, but I feel like I'm going to have to. And where would you be comfortable taking him? Because in this mock that we're referencing right now, he went 48th, and I talked with some of my people who I confer with in secret about all of this, and they seem to think he's a top 30 guy, like he could go in the 30s. Do you agree with that, or what do you see 2017 looking like for Trey Turner? What's your general impression of him? Because he's been fantastic so far.
He has. He makes me very upset because I stashed him and then just kind of like cut him loose.
Hopefully in a redraft.
All right. Power, not totally sold.
Mm-hmm.
BABIP could be sold, not at a 385 level. Give him like 340, 350. And that's being very generous, I think, for a projection. But, you know, if he carries that upside, I mean, he could be one of the few who can do it. Look, we're talking about how many balls in play is this?
Well, he has 281 plate appearances.
He's got 200 balls in play-ish.
I tweeted this out earlier, but he exceeded Pecota's 90th percentile preseason projection in about 150 to 200 fewer plate appearances this year.
Which I think is like absolutely telling of what we should expect from him going forward. Because, and it's not like Pecota's infallible, mm-hmm. because it makes mistakes. It doesn't have a brain, but there's a reason why it projected the way it projected.
Yeah.
You know, is he going to keep stealing at this clip? I don't think so. Is he going to keep hitting home runs or his batting average at this clip? I think a reasonable expectation would be like half this pace for next year, which is still a really good ball player. It's going to be 15 home runs, 40 steals, 290 batting average or something. I mean, I don't know. I'm just ballparking it here, and that's a great player, but he's not like next 25, 60, 330 or something.
No, I don't think he's I'm a little skeptical on the average. I think the power, I was talking about this with Brett Sayer, and he says he told me he thinks Turner is a little bit more of a 10 to 12 to 15 home run kind of guy at his ceiling. I don't think he's going to hit 20 home runs, is basically what he was saying. And right. I agree with that. I think the speed, I mean, look at what Dusty Baker does. He's kind of old school. He lets guys run. I think there's a chance he could steal more than 50 bases. I think that's in play. I think 40 is a nice floor to project and pay for, but I think I'd take the over on 40 to 45 steals.
I like that too. I mean, it's elite speed. Like we're definitely not doubting that tool. And yeah, it is a lot of just not even opportunity. It's like just having the green light. Like we're looking, I think a prevalent example is Machado, who went from 20 steals to zero, mm-hmm. really with no change of scenery. And kind of the Brewers ramping up their running game this year from last. It's kind of just an environment thing. I think you're right. If Baker wants them to run, he's going to run. I mean, it's not like he can't, because he's obviously doing it. So, you know, I like the play on the over 40. I'll probably project 40 just to be safe and see kind of where he falls on a list of 100 guys. You know, if he's falling like top 50, then it's like, all right. I mean, realistically, I'm looking at a floor for Trey Turner of like 1040, 280, and that's like a 50th overall player. Then I know that I should be going maybe a little more bullish on that, and I'm sure everyone else will be too. But you know, at least I can feel good about it.
See, where I've had a problem is in the past with projections is I like to look at guys who performed well in AAA, and I've been fooled by a number of guys like that, but. And guys who've come up through the minor leagues and hit consistently, I tend to gravitate towards those guys and buy in a little bit more, because I remember a couple years ago I ended up with two guys who were considerably higher than most of the industry had them, and it was Mookie Betts and Steven Souza. And one of those turned out to be a good call. The other was not so much. Right. So I tend to believe a little bit more with Turner here. And, like, I think he could be a top 50 guy for me. I would not be surprised if that's where he fell in my valuations when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either, honestly. I just, yeah, I can't give him that. I cannot give him the firm endorsement yet. in the context of this draft, he went, where did he go?
48. Yeah.
That's exactly what we're talking about. That actually might not even be soon enough, as we will find out. Maybe that's totally valid. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the other guy everyone's going to focus on, and that's Gary Sanchez, who seems to be intent on breaking every record possible. He's up to 19 home runs. He's hitting .337 as we record this. I mean, what more do you want? I've been thoroughly impressed with Sanchez. I've seen him a bunch in the minor leagues too. Man, he's good. And I don't agree with some of the comps that are being made to Kyle Schwarber, because I think Schwarber might be a better hitter than Sanchez. Like, honestly, I think Schwarber's a better hitter, but I don't know. I want to get your take on Sanchez before we go any further on how I feel, because are you buying in on the Gary Sanchez, what you've seen so far, as a top, let's say, three catcher next year, that range?
So,
like, it's Posey, Lucroy, and is it then Sanchez would be my question.
Probably not. And if this is reminding me of anyone, it's reminding me of Miguel Sano a little bit, mm-hmm. Which is, it's not as extreme, excuse me, but Sano had that huge power output last year, albeit with much more questionable plate discipline. And he went like top 40, I think, which is kind of crazy if we look in hindsight. And I was telling everyone to get the hell away from that, but that's fine.
People
that
bought
was
the
then,
OBP.
This is now. I'm looking at, on a per rate basis, I mean, there are some things that scare me a little bit about Sanchez, but it's just hard to say anything definitive because it's not an incredibly large sample size. But I'm looking at a fairly low line drive rate, a fairly high infield fly ball rate. He hits the ball hard, but I don't know if he's going to be an above average BABIP guy. In fact, he might be a below average BABIP guy, because the guys with his kind of batted ball profile are the, like, Edwin Encarnaciones and Jose Bautistas of this world, who...
Those guys are pretty good, though.
They're excellent ball players. And if Jose Bautistas was a catcher, I would... I would cry. Happy tears. But, you know, a .356 BABIP, I'm just very skeptical of. And that's just the first thing, aside from a 40% home run to fly ball rate. No reason why you can't do half of that and still run, like, I don't know, like a 30 home run season. I mean, I'm not.
So you're saying he won't hit 80 home runs next year?
I'm going to take, you know, I can't definitively say I'll take the under on that, but I'm leaning under on 80.
I think Sanchez is one of those guys, when you see it, you kind of know. And there's a lot of that. There's no stat I can use to quantify this, but I've really liked what I've seen from Gary Sanchez, and I think there is a little bit of a narrative element to what I'm saying. It's all narrative, but I like what I've seen from Sanchez. I think the power is real, and I'm not as, because does the batting average really matter? Because considering where he is at, if he's your starting catcher, I mean, does it really make that big of a difference?
Right, and I'm nitpicking, because obviously we're talking about a position where, like, Brian McCann is like a fifth ranked catcher, and that dude runs like a .220 average with 20 home runs or something. So, like, if Gary Sanchez can do that,
if he can hit .260, I'd be jumping. Like, that'd be great.
Yeah, right? And I think that sounds about right. Probably. I mean, maybe, like, yeah, maybe he runs .270. I mean, the extra home runs will help.
So I think the real question then is, how much power are we able to reasonably project here?
Dude, I have no idea. I rely on you guys for that. I've heard 30 is within reach, and I mean, obviously it's hard to say no to that at this point. And to get back to the original question, I think I still like Schwarber a little more. Mm-hmm. And he did go before Sanchez in this draft, if that means anything to anyone. But I know that's probably going to be like one of the hot, yeah, you're right, one of the hot talking points of this offseason is who's better.
Well, I think I'd fall on the Schwarber side of things right now, but the problem with Schwarber, I mean, if you're looking at this from a dynasty standpoint, it's how long is he going to retain catcher eligibility? He may never get it back after this upcoming season,
especially with Contreras around.
Right. So, yeah. I think it's really clear in a dynasty, but in a redraft, man, I'd be hard pressed to let Schwarber go by. As much as I do like Gary Sanchez, I'm in the boat of 20 to 25. I think that's a reasonable projection for home runs, because I think there's a bit of an adjustment coming where people just aren't going to pitch to him as much anymore. I think that's where it's really going to come into play. Is he going to be patient enough to just take a boatload of walks? And you know, I don't know. We'll see.
Right.
What else struck you in this industry draft that's going on right now? Because you took Scherzer with the 10th pick, which I like. You mentioned earlier you're happy to go with a pitcher in the first round, and he's the only guy who's above. Well, there aren't a lot of guys who struck out 200 batters this season, and Scherzer is like a mile ahead of the rest of the pack.
Yeah, that was kind of right. So this is me doing a strategy that I probably wouldn't normally do, which is even though I just talked a mad game, a pretty mean game about taking Kershaw first round, I don't think I've ever had the opportunity to do that. Scherzer, you know, take this with a grain of salt, but he's about to put forward at least his second top 10 finish in a row per ESPN's player rater. So I was just making a point. I'm going to take him 10th if he's still there, and just kind of build a team around that. And I think there's so much offense right now that I'm like not desperate to have to fill something in. Like I wasn't like compelled to have to pick Donaldson or Rizzo because it just runs deep right now. Pardon my French. If you have to edit that later.
Yeah, that's fine.
Right. So I just kind of did it to make a point. I don't think in a real draft I would take Scherzer that early, mostly because I know he's going to fall farther than that. But I just did it to make a point. One of the things that was really interesting to me was Machado going third.
Okay.
Over Arenado, over Bryant, over basically everyone, obviously, because he was third.
Well, Betts went second.
Betts went second. Trout went first.
Were you surprised? Were you surprised Harper went ninth?
A little too early for me.
Okay. See, I do like Harper.
I like Harper too, and you know, I don't even know what to believe at this point. I think he's got some bad luck on BABIP. I'd have to look more closely at it. And I keep hearing speculation about him being injured, playing through injury. So, if he slipped in a draft, I would definitely.
I'm afraid one of these years I'm going to let him go by and he's going to have that year where he just gets pissed off and hits 55 home runs and I'm going to hate myself. So that's the
basically
fear.
Basically last year, right?
Yeah, but he could do that again. I mean, he's what, 23 or whatever? Like he's he's not old. So Machado, why wouldn't you take him third? Or make him the first third base? Why in your opinion do you think Bryant and Arenado should be above Machado then?
I think I like Arenado a little better in terms of power, and he has like just really good plate discipline for his profile. I mean, you don't see guys who strike out 15% of the time, walk 10% of the time, and hit 40 home runs. That doesn't happen anymore.
No.
For me, Machado would only be more valuable if he started running again, which I guess is a decent speculative play because he's obviously capable of it and he's still young. It's just, I think it's a matter of who's coaching third base or something. I mean, it's the same third base coach in Baltimore. I don't know what the hell happened.
That's a really good point because I think in the preseason, we were talking on this show about why we liked Manny Machado in the first round because he gave you speed. Because
right,
you could get, at a minimum, 10 to 15 steals. That was a reasonable projection. He's stolen zero. He's only run three times all year.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not good.
But so if you're banking on the fact that he could he could start to run again. And he I'm looking now, he's actually attempted three steals but got caught every time.
Right.
If you were banking on that, I could definitely see it. And it's honestly, we're splitting hairs because these guys are all incredible. But I think I would probably just take Air. I mean, if I was going like 3, 4, 5, like, I don't know, Arenado, Bryant, Machado. I mean, again, splitting hairs, but I don't know if he's worth it third overall. Like, I think I would have liked Altuve there, honestly. Yeah. So that was, I think that was more my gripe in that sense.
Yep. A guy who I've been getting a lot of positive buzz from people I talk to is Charlie Blackmon. Everybody seems to really, I mean, obviously he's a really good player, but I think people are even more confident in elevating him into that first round territory now. Are you on board with that? Because I know I've seen a lot of pieces where people are talking about Blackmon as a potential first rounder and 15 team leagues. Do you see that as the case, or where do you stand on a guy like Charlie Blackmon?
I mean, I think kind of like Scherzer, I think he's about to close in on his third top 15 finish in a row. Mm-hmm. Just based on, I mean, the past. Yeah. I mean, I guess he warrants it. I'm actually a little concerned about him. Because I don't know if the power spike is legit and his stolen bases have tapered off considerably this season. And I think if the power dips down and he's not running the same way, he's actually not a top 15 guy. But from his previous merits, yeah, I think he's worth the consideration. And I think he's still going to be really good. But I actually kind of foresee, like, the beginning of the end a little bit. And the end is a very dramatic way of stating it, obviously. But I'm actually a little concerned about next season.
You brought up a good point where we're kind of at this time of the year, we're looking at everything as though it's going to stay the same. The things that we're seeing now, nothing is going to really change that dramatically, but in reality it does. How do you combat recency bias when you're going to go into the offseason and put together your projections? Because it's hard to look forward and sort of predict bad things happening. I think that's the challenge for me sometimes, is how do we do that?
Yeah, and right, I'm only human. I'm also fallible. I'm not a machine. Yeah, not a robot. But you just kind of have to think critically about it, and kind of like, I think you just have to step back. Like, I really like doing like the blind resume exercises where you like kind of strip a guy's name away and just evaluate it for what it is, and not like think about his name brand or what he did recently. You kind of just look at the big picture.
Or what you think they could do.
Right, or what you think, right. Or, you know, if it's a top prospect, like you're just enamored with that top prospect glow. I'm looking at his profile right now, and the power, whatever. I mean, everyone's power is up. It's all probably going to come back down. But stolen bases down from 56 attempts last season to 23 this season in not that many fewer plate appearances. And he's, what, 27, 28 years old? Oh, he's 30.
He's old.
Holy. Yeah, I forgot that he debuted really late. So, like, he's at a point where, like, the aging curve can really sneak up on him and quickly. And I'm a little wary about him just kind of, like, falling off the edge a la Andrew McCutchen, who basically is now a 4, maybe even only a 3 category player. Whereas, you know, 2 years ago, he was all 5 across the board.
Yep. So who else in this draft so far? We'll kind of wrap up on the draft here. But who else? Well, I guess you could give me a couple of picks that you liked in terms of where the guys went. You think right now they're probably good value in your mind. And maybe some picks that you scratch your head a little bit at right now.
Well, I'll just tell you, because there's on this couch managers thing, you can actually vote good and bad on these picks, and I haven't voted on anything, but two people voted bad on Lindor at 11th overall. So if that's any, and that's...
Well, there's he's had a bad couple of weeks here, but...
Has he?
I mean...
Actually, I haven't been paying attention, honestly.
No, he hasn't. Let me look, I can get some actual numbers on that, but I know he's been... Well, let's see.
I don't feel like it.
I'm not going to do it. But I know he's had a little bit of a dip here recently, so I think maybe that's playing in. But
sure.
I'm a big Lindor guy.
I'm a big Lindor guy, but he is the first shortstop off the board above Seager, above literally everyone else, Correa, Bogarts. And I you know, you can make that argument over, easily.
I don't agree with him over Seager. That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know about that one either. I don't know about that one either. As I'm scrolling here, okay, Dozier, second round, 23rd overall. That's so crazy. Cargo, Carlos Gonzalez at 33, I thought was a horrible pick. Sorry, Jason. That's before Cespedes, Cruz, Freddie, Braun, literally anyone you can think of.
Yeah. Nope.
McCutchen at 42nd is very tenuous for me. Because I had already, I guess I'm patting myself on the back for this one, but I think a lot of us saw like the dip coming this season from what happened in 2015. And I don't think it's going to get any better. I mean, I'd have to look a little more closely. Again, that same caveat applies always. But I, oh man, I don't feel good about this one. Daniel Murphy right after, that is interesting and valid. 43rd overall. Trevor Story at 56th. We're gonna have to hear a lot about Trevor Story this offseason too. Ugh,
no, thank you. I don't want to. Sorry, I don't want to talk about him.
him and Schwarber, three picks apart.
Oh boy, I can talk about Schwarber for a week. He was good at Indiana. Man, I look at this and I think the best pick of the draft, if you guys had to play this out, Andrew McCutchen at 42.
You liked it, huh?
Yeah, if he comes back and is healthy-ish.
Yeah, he does. He slipped a lot. So, yeah, if he returns to form, it's brilliant.
He was a top 10 pick this year, wasn't he? Top 12, 15?
Man. Let's find out.
I don't have the ADP in front of me, but he was a first-round pick, I want to say. I mean, he was perennially 14th. A top. Yeah. I don't think he's fallen off that much. He's not... I don't think the decline is going to be that steep. I think a lot of this was injury related, and I think that could be the best pick of this draft so far. I want to do a quick game with you here to wrap up the show. It's going to be five questions, and this is going to be a recurring theme throughout the offseason. Whenever we have a guest on, a very special guest, we're going to do five questions. So this is five questions with Alex Chamberlain. I'll start off. First one. Your favorite fantasy sleeper for 2017. And I'm not going to hold you to it, but who do you like?
Oh, wow. Well, I actually just wrote a piece, and he's the only one on my mind, and I don't even know how much of a sleeper I actually think he is, but Alex Dickerson on the Padres. He looks a lot like an outfielding Kyle Seager. As it stands, small sample, of course, caveat applies. Before 2016, his plate discipline was shaky. Now he looks like he has above average contact skills, and I am definitely looking forward to grabbing him in a late round.
I don't know how the playing time shakes out in San Diego, though. That's my only
I don't
thing.
Either.
They have too many bodies at this point. Someone's got to go. Okay, next question. You have one pitcher for three outs, current pitcher. Who are you choosing?
Any outs? Any three?
Well, let's say, yeah, any three. You have to get three outs. It's the sixth inning. You can call on any pitcher in baseball. High leverage situation.
Who this are you calling? This is probably like not the best managerial move, but I just like watching Corey Kluber pitch, so I'd probably pick Kluber.
That's not a bad choice. I think I'd go with Bartolo Colon. There's there's no way he lets you down. Like, you know he's coming up big. Worst fantasy call of all time.
Whoa. Of mine or just like,
well,
ever?
I'm going to say you. I'm going to ask this one a bunch. But I always love bad calls because I have a bunch. Like, I'll give you mine first. I mean, I was all over Carter Capps, like, and I was telling everybody and their mother to draft him, and he did not throw a pitch this year. So.
Well, but that's an injury, you know. That's like not like him sucking.
Yeah, true. But
so there's this like, there's this kind of, I guess it's like infamous to probably this one reader on Fangraphs who got very upset at me. but I wrote a piece in May of 2015 about Cargo being done, Carlos Gonzalez. And it was right before he took off. And I had, like, you know, and it was, like, fully supported with data. Jonah Pemstein, I think that's his last name, at Fangraphs does, like, this incredible work with data and the reliability and stability of statistics. And I'm looking at it, and it's like, look, Cargo is, like, 250 batted balls. His ISO is, like, 60 or something. It was something super bad. And I was like, this is pretty reliable. Like, there's a 1 in 1,000 chance that he's going to post a 40 home run season. And then sure enough, dude just takes off rest of the season, crushing it. This one reader on Fangraphs, like, commented on every single one of my posts and was like, this is the guy who said Cargo was done. And I was like, shut up, leave me alone. So that was my horrifically bad pick last year.
The way I look at it, if we're not getting things wrong, then we're not doing this right. Because
you
have to make some bold calls one way or the other. And you're going to get some stuff right and some stuff wrong. I think that's the lesson to take away with that. But I love hearing the people's bad calls, because some of them are really good. They're fun.
Yeah.
Favorite prospect in the game right now? Doesn't have to be fantasy related, but who's a prospect that you really like?
Oh man, I've been bad on keeping up with the prospects, and all of my favorite ones got promoted.
You can give me one of those then. That's fine.
I mean, Bregman just looks so good.
Yeah.
Bregman looks so good, and when he started out slow, I mean, you just kind of want to slap people, because he was running like an 85 BABIP. And people think he sucks, and now he's being Bregman. Bregman being Bregman. He looks great, and he looked great before he came up. Moncada, I was high on until he made it to Double A, and then he looked like he couldn't hit anymore.
Well, the strikeouts, against off-speed stuff, he kind of looked overmatched.
Yeah, he did.
I don't know why they promoted him, to be honest.
And then why they even promoted him to the bigs to just sit there and fester.
Yeah.
Gotta love the Red Sox.
It's an embarrassment of riches at this point. Thank you, Ben Sherrington, for all your hard work.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that, but I think if you had asked me 2 months ago, I would have said Bregman, which is the easy answer, I guess.
I think we already kind of got your answer on the hitter side of this, of which ADP you're going to disagree with maybe the most in Gary Sanchez. I don't think you're going to agree with that ADP a lot. This upcoming offseason, but who's a pitcher that you're going to disagree, either positive or negative, with their ADP this offseason?
It makes me really sad, but it's probably going to be Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah.
Which sucks, because he was super good last year, and anyone who was paying any kind of attention knew that. And I got him as my last pitcher in 2015. I did it again this year. And now I think he's going to go top 20 or 25.
Yeah, I'm always leery of guys who don't strike out a ton of batters, and I get that with Hendricks. And the Cubs defense, I don't know if they were historically good this year. Like, that's not disputable. So there's a little bit of regression coming in the runs allowed department. So I can totally see that.
Yeah, so I think that – yeah. Yeah, damn, dude.
It hurts because
really
we like
him too.
yeah. Yep. All right, cool. So, Alex, any final thoughts before we let you go here?
No, just thanks for livening up my work day.
Yeah, this has been good. We should do this again sometime. I would like that.
I would love to. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Awesome. So there you have it, Alex Chamberlain. He's a writer at Rotographs. You can follow his stuff there. Check out his piece on Alex Dickerson. I like that one. He's got a ton of good stuff up there on the site right now. You can follow him on Twitter at Dolph Haldhagen. I'll say it wrong until the end of time, I believe.
You actually got it right. You're good.
There we go. Perfect. Awesome. Alex, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks. You have a good one.
So we're going to take a quick break here for a message from our presenting sponsor, Pennant Wars. Check it out today, pennantwars.com. Try it for free, and then we'll come back and wrap up the show next. Today's episode of Flags Fly Forever is brought to you by Pennant Wars, our presenting sponsor for the podcast. Pennant Wars is an online baseball management game where you call the shots as the GM of your own baseball franchise. Build a team that plays your brand of baseball, draft and develop amateurs, spend big in the free agent market, or make blockbuster trades with other owners. Tenet War's in-depth and realistic simulation engine plays out full 162 game seasons, pitch by pitch, over the course of just 6 weeks. Best of all, the Tenet War's universe is always on, so you can check in and manage your team from anywhere, at home, on your phone, or even at work. There are only a few weeks left in the fantasy baseball season, so now is the perfect time to get started with Tenet Wars. Head over to PennantWars.com to try it out for free today. That's PennantWars.com. Try it for free today. We're back. Thank you for listening to episode 105 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Perspectives Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of the content on baseballperspectives.com. Sign up for a super premium membership. You get access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. It's a great service. You're going to love it. Try it out today. So I want to thank our guest once again, Alex Chamberlain, for coming on with us. You can follow him on Twitter at Dolph Haldhagen. You can follow me on Twitter at George Bissell. And you can email us if you have a question or a topic for a future show. That's flagsflyforever at baseballperspectives.com. Finally, don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Tell us about your feelings. We'd love to hear from you. So for Alex Chamberlain, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until our next show, we're going to be back next week with Brett Sayer and Mike Gianella. The gang will be all here. Until our next show, so long, everybody.